Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the continuously updated HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate New York, and through our link to Phoenix, Arizona, and Boston, Massachusetts. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, NMLS number 37405. Hunt Mortgage is an equal opportunity lender. You can call them today, 633-3700, and ask one of our skilled mortgage consultants to work with you to find the lowest rate and closing costs for your particular home financing needs and wants, and that's always our guarantee. And ask about our many exclusive programs, including our pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk, zero cost, zero risk, to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash, because you'll actually have a mortgage commitment in your hand. And in today's very competitive listing environment, and where demand is exceeding the supply of listings, you want to make sure that when you're competing on an offer, which is often the case, unfortunately, that your offer will be as good as cash for that seller. So call Hunt Mortgage today at 633-3700 for personalized, customized service that will knock your socks off. And don't forget about the first ever 24/7 365 real estate hotline, the Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property listed for sale here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate, and then again through our links to Phoenix, Arizona, and Boston, Massachusetts. Simply dial 716-631-4800 locally. Enter the street number of the house you want to know about, no matter whose listing it is, and the hotline will prompt you with the choice of street names. Select the one you want, you'll hear a brief description, and then you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that property. It's all automatic, just that fast, anytime, in any market we serve, on any listing, whether it's ours or any of the brokers. You'll drive by a sign sometimes and see 14 names and pictures and directionals and QR codes and everything else. You can't possibly write all that stuff down. So just remember this number, 631-4800, and the rest will be automatic. Hunt is the official real estate and relocation provider of our hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo Sabres, and the Rochester Americans. And last week I heard Ralph Kruber spoke to our leadership team, and what an amazing man. I think we're going to have a great season this year if we can ever get on the ice. Hopefully, I spoke with someone who would know last evening, and it seems to me that we may have a season coming up in January, so we're certainly hoping for that. Go Bills, big game tomorrow. They got to get off that losing streak. We are broadcast live here at WBEN 930 AM, and you can reach us here in the studio at 803-0930 or 1-800-616-9236 if you're long distance, and star 930 if you're mobile. Those are all free calls, and you can always text us, too, at 803-0930. We have a very special show for you today. Those of you that are regular listeners will recall that a couple weeks ago I had Stephen Tucker on from the Northland Workforce Training Center. And to kind of piggyback on that and also talk about a lot of great things happening here in our city, Dennis Elsenbeck is with us. Mr. Elsenbeck happens to be the chairman of the board of the Northland Training Center. He is also your title is president of the company?
Yes, it is, Peter.
Okay, good. Your mic's not on, so we got to wait for Jerry to come back in, so I'll do a little talking here. But in the meantime, I'll introduce Dennis again. He's been on the show several times in various capacities. Dennis, as you may recall, is the retired director and stakeholder and policy for National Grid. That's quite a title, Dennis. You can explain that to us in a while. After that, he went to Phillips Lytle to found their and lead their energy and sustainability group, which is a very interesting change of not really a change for you, but something that went in a little bit of a different direction, which really reflects his passion for sustainable technologies, which is really what we're here to talk about. And to help us with that is one of the leading experts in that area, John Williams, who has spent over three decades, starting, building, and managing businesses ranging from specialty contracting companies to large-scale power generation. And he's brought all that expertise into a new business, which is called Viridi Parente. And that's what we're going to talk about. So, John, test your mic.
Good morning, Peter.
You're there. Good. Okay, good. I'm going to talk to you then until we get Dennis wired up here. So, John, tell us a little bit about how you got interested in all this. I know how Dennis did. He'll tell us in a minute. But This is a little bit of a departure from your previous businesses.
It is, Peter. But it really, it was our businesses that brought us into the space. So Dennis, and many moons ago, was a customer at National Grid. And we supplied construction equipment to his field operations and supported a lot of the physical work that goes on to connect gas and electric to residential and commercial buildings. Dennis had asked for equipment to be electrically powered as opposed to internal combustion engines and diesel and gas. It didn't exist in the market. He asked why. I said there's no real good reason it doesn't exist, but customers need to request products and then manufacturers respond. And Dennis, you know, much to his character, said, okay, I want electric products. And that conversation really started this, and that was about 10 years ago.
You know, Dennis, you've been on to talk about various iterations in your life, including your charitable iterations and our work together, really, at the United Way, which has been, and you've really been a monumental force in that organization. I appreciate the great work you've done, which reflects in both cases, and you've been very philanthropically involved as well, John Williams. But why, I mean, I've had so many people on here that have talked about why they stay in Western New York or don't, or why this is a good place or not such a good place to do business. A business like you're talking about, let's just talk about why you're doing it here.
I mean, Peter, there's in anything we do, there are objective and subjective considerations. You know, so if you look at any business strictly on the numbers and the objective characteristics, it's hard to make a case for Buffalo. It's hard to make a case for New York State. Right? You have taxes, you have regulation, you have a population that is stagnant for the most part and sometimes shrinking. But if subjectively you balance those issues, it's easy to make a case for Buffalo, much more so than New York State. Buffalo is a tremendous community. It's a place you like to be, right? And work does not consume your life. While it's a large part of it, there's also a large part that is philanthropic and social and just quality of life. And Western New York has a tremendous quality of life. We have good leadership. We have good leadership at the city level. We have good leadership at our city council. We have very effective leadership at the county. I mean, the trains run on time, which is what you want as citizens and businesses, right? You want your infrastructure and the physical part of your community to function. So while you overlay everything that New York State does, and much of it comes out of New York City and the realities of that population and that density, you also balance it with where do you want to be? Now, the advantage to New York State for our business today is that they are a leader in climate. I mean, New York State has taken a position on climate through the New York State Senate and the legislature to say, we want to be in front of this, right? We want to be a state that not only leads in its objectives for climate, but we lead in the manufacturing that reaches those objectives, right? So instead of just giving out a grant to encourage someone to have a specific habit, we want to create products in this state that are going to expand across the nation and the world and return New York State to where it was 100 years ago, which, you know, when at the advent of alternating current, right, electricity, the things that are powering these mics and our cell phones and our world, New York State led that. I mean, it was Westinghouse and GE that electrified the world. And GE did it from Albany, New York, and Westinghouse did it from Buffalo, right? So this is almost back to the future, right? If we can figure this out and we can become leaders in this renewable space, you can bring New York State and Buffalo and Western New York back to where they were, which was a leadership position in the world.
Dennis, you and I have talked about in the past about the grid and getting off the grid. And in our last conversation some time ago, we were talking about the possibility of the use of alternative energy sources and how an individual homeowner could effectively, as you explained, it really doesn't quite work that well or that way, but it was very interesting. And tell us how your technology, you've got various technologies, we're going to kind of walk through them, but the one technology that I went and visited yesterday, a couple of them, but one technology that really impressed me was how you're taking the system that exists right now and making it more efficient. Just, I know that takes a while to explain that, but just describe how you're bringing new efficiency to the generation power.
Yeah, first off, I'd ask your listeners to maybe forget what we're hearing from the Green New Deal, just because I think it confuses people. We actually look at it from the point of view is that either we're going to have to save the planet over the next 12 years, or we're going to have to worry about our economic being destroyed if we don't enter into these type of green energy solutions. The reality is New York has set in law certain goals, including solar farms, wind farms, and battery farms at a very high level. What that equates to is building supply in green space, and that's what's happening here in New York. These programs are actually funded through the electric bill, so our residential, commercial, industrial consumers are actually the ones who fund these type of programs. What the battery storage system does is actually looks at it from the point of view of the customer, of the ratepayer, of the person who's paying the bill. And instead of building solar farms and wind farms and then paying for that, which will actually increase your bills, if you install the battery in your home or in your business, your bill is actually going to go down. So it's a different perspective that we're trying to work with. Just like you had talked about with the community, we have got to listen to the consumer because the consumer actually knows what they want, and our product actually delivers on the needs being expressed by the consumer, which is, please help me control my bills. And that's what our product line does.
Well, that begs the question of how. John Williams, you've been at this for a long time. Just describe how you do that.
So Peter, and we talked about this yesterday. Our electric grid is much like our water grid was 100 years ago, right? So 100 years ago, as we urbanized cities and started to understand architecture and engineering and built buildings that were continually higher and more dense, our water system couldn't support it. So every building that went up in a major metropolitan area had a water tank on the roof. And the reason it had a water tank on the roof was because we needed pressure and we needed volume. So when everybody got up in the morning to take a shower, everybody turned on their faucet at the same time. And the city and municipal supply couldn't keep up with it. So the tank on the roof was a storage structure, right? And it used gravity to provide pressure. And it used the size of the tank to provide volume, which was the amount of water needed at that moment. So everybody would turn on their showers and their sinks, and they'd all have their convenience. They'd leave the building and go to work or school or wherever. And then all day long, there'd be a very small water line that would refill that tank. And it might take 6 or 8 hours to do it. And then at night when they came home at the end of the day, they would do dishes and laundry and baths and get ready for bed. And the tank would drain way down. And then overnight, it would refill again. Well, our electrical grid is really the same concept, right? We all get up in the morning and turn on our lights and hit our microwaves and pick up our iPhones and boot up our computers. We put a huge draw on that electrical grid, and it's called peak demand, right? So the grid goes into a situation where it is at capacity, and some businesses have to shut off depending on the time of year. If a lot of air conditioning kicks on, you have to shut down manufacturing because there's not enough power in the grid.
What's happening in California right now?
Happens in California. Wildfires, all kinds of things. And that situation abates, though, as soon as humans, we change our habit in the next hour, right? Buildings come down to temperature, right? Air conditioning settles down. Compressors shut off. People are at the place of work, so they aren't running microwaves and everything else. And we come off that peak demand. That happens for 4, 5, or 6 hours. And then at night, it peaks up again. You know, around 5, 6 o'clock, but then by 7, 8 o'clock at night, it drops way off. And from 8 or 9 o'clock at night until 5 or 6 the next morning, we use almost none of our capacity. So what this pack is, it's a storage device, right? And what it does is that when we're using very little power as consumers, the pack is taking all of that energy off the grid and storing it. Then when we go to use peak supply, the pack is supplying that peak so that you never overstress the grid. You never get to that peak transmission level. And there's a bunch of things that happen in that equation, right? The first one is you create 100% resiliency. No one ever has an unplanned power outage because the battery, by definition, is a storage device and a backup. So whenever there's an intermittent outage, whenever there's a brownout, whenever there's power that goes down because of a storm, the pack is there to supply energy instantaneously. The second thing that happens is that pack at the point of use is almost a one-to-one conversion, meaning there's no loss between the transmission plant out on the lake and all the lines that has to go through to get to your house for you to use it. So every kilowatt hour you put in that pack, you use. So from an efficiency standpoint, it's almost 100% efficiency. The third piece of that that is really, you know, plays to the Climate Act and really advances our goals towards decarbonization is that when you take energy off the grid at night, it's latent, meaning it's in the grid, it has no home. So it really just somewhat evaporates through the lines because the energy's there, but there's nobody using it. And the majority of that energy is coming from renewable sources like Niagara Falls. So when you take that energy in the off hours into the pack, you're taking renewable energy. And then you're using it when normally a coal plant or a gas turbine or something else would have to spin up to make that peak. So it hits on a lot of points. But the most important point of all of that is it's a better product. It's more cost effective. It provides better electro service, and it solves for a lot of issues that we don't solve for today.
And we talked about this yesterday a little bit when I took a tour of your facility, which was pretty amazing. And I asked, well, gee, a lot of people have generators. Why would they look at a product like yours if they've already got a generator?
Yeah, so a generator is in place. If you lose power, the generator comes on. The biggest difference between a generator and a battery storage system is that the battery storage system will also engage if you lose power, but it is actually designed to interact with the grid and electric pricing. So what happens with a battery storage system, as John pointed out, it's looking at low electric prices during the evening, and then it'll actually engage or discharge during the daytime when electric prices tend to be high. And it's a very interactive process. Historically, utilities would try and persuade consumers to go to what is referred to as a time of use rate. This way, it will take the pressure off of the grid if, in fact, let's say you were doing your laundry at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. The idea that we would change human behavior to such drastic levels is really hard to conceive in today's world and today's availability of certain technologies like battery storage. So with battery storage, you actually get the benefit of the time of use rates without changing any of your behavior on when you do your laundry or what you do on a day-to-day basis. So the benefit of the technology is it provides that lower cost by charging in the off-peak, which is in the evening, and then discharging during the daytime. And when I refer to discharging, I mean that the power that goes into your home is through the battery and not the utility system. That actually takes pressure off the utility and benefits the distribution lines. We mentioned California a little earlier. California is just a great classic case of how policy can get us off track. So we look at California, we say a lot of the wildfires were actually started by the temperature rise in the electric feeders that are out there. So if you listen to the governor, his response to that is that, well, we'll need to actually build more renewable energy. If you put more renewable energy, it doesn't take the pressure off the electric lines because the pressure from the electric lines is actually from the consumption of energy. And so the utilities during that period of time actually sent out notifications to their consumers indicating that we really appreciate you sacrificing because you shut down businesses, you shut off your air conditioners, you actually stopped charging your electric vehicles, so that the utilities really appreciated that. The bottom line is that good energy policy to shut down our economy? So the battery storage systems, if they employed that across California, would actually have reduced the demand required from the electric system, and that would have slowed down the temperature rise of the electric systems that actually caused the wildfire. We've got to start solving problems, and the problem starts at the point of use.
So the difference, the big difference is that seems to me that the politicians are talking about power generation. How are we going to generate power? Let's go to the solar, wind, hydro, or nuclear, and then there's battery. So there's power generation, but your system really absorbs energy from the generation source, if I'm correct in assuming that, and then just stores it until it's best to use it and most efficiently. We have to go to break in a minute here, but less than a minute. But I want to kind of make sure our listeners understand what we're really talking about here, and really the revolutionary nature of what you're doing here, and it goes back to why Buffalo. But then let's fast forward a little bit. We come back and say, what happens if this works out as well as you think it will, and what happens then? What will happen to our community as a result of the kind of work you're doing, which I think could be quite revolutionary. And we'll be right back with more from our host here after these important messages.
Hunt has been serving your real estate services needs since 1911. In all that time, Hunt has never lost their commitment to this community, and nothing, including our current challenges, will change that commitment. Hunt will face the challenges as they always have with you, together. Through the power of state-of-the-art technology, they're able to remain open for business at Hunt Mortgage. Call 633-3700 and any of Hunt's mortgage professionals can assist you. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, NMLS 37405, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
The West End, Buffalo's premier luxury waterfront development, is now open for private tours. Starting at $850,000, each townhome unit features three bedrooms, three and a half bathrooms, high-end finishes, multiple balconies, hardwood floors, soaring ceilings, two-car attached garage, and much more. With only 20 units being built, now is the time to make your appointment to view the model unit from this landmark development from Simonelli Real Estate. To schedule a viewing, call exclusive listing agent Deacon Tasker with Hunt Real Estate at 280-7787 or visit westendbuffalo.com.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the continuously updated huntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. Huntrealestate.com is the only place on the web where you can find a complete inventory of homes available not just here in Buffalo, Niagara, but all across upstate and through our links to Phoenix, Arizona, and also Boston, Massachusetts. You'll also find access to a complete set of homeownership services at huntrealestate.com, which is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. And for more information about our many exclusive programs, including the one that allows you to roll the cost of home improvements into your mortgage, allowing you to effectively buy the before but live the after, call 633-3700 and ask for details. Also ask about our pre-purchase commitment and even our second look program, which is really one of the best things we've ever done. Oftentimes you'll be watching television at night and there'll be something about a mortgage, the lowest rates, blah, blah, blah. And you might respond to it, and they might send you a qualification sheet or something like that, or even a pre-approval. Before you go signing up for something, let us take a second look at it. Make sure that you're getting the lowest rate and closing costs, and that's our guarantee, of course. But we want to make sure that you're getting the very best deal in town or any place available in the United States, really, and that's only available through Hunt Mortgage and our second look program, 633-3700. General questions about real estate, 633-9400. That's Hunt Real Estate ERA Customer Service Center. One of our customer service reps will either instantly direct you to the appropriate professional for your particular needs or answer your call right there, your question, whether you're buying or selling a home, financing a home, insuring a home, or even fixing up the one you have. And remember, our guarantee stands. We will sell your home or ERA will buy it. That's the seller security plan available only through a Hunt Real Estate ERA professional. We have a very special show for you today, a little bit different than some of our previous shows. In the studio with me today is John Williams. Mr. Williams is the founder of an organization called Verde Parente, and they have a very interesting mission, which I'll let him explain to you. And I like what you call yourself, a disruptive energy company, and that's what we're here really to talk about. And probably a leading expert in our whole community on that is Dennis Elsenbeck, who is the president of this organization, having been a lifelong or career-long leader at National Grid. Welcome back, gentlemen. And prior to the break, we were talking about the concept of power generation versus storage and really where your system comes into play. And I'm going to ask you to kind of summarize that a little bit and then go off from that and just to kind of help us understand where this goes for the consumer, first of all, somebody sitting in their home right now listening to this, what's the practical application of this? And then how does what you're doing really put Buffalo on the map in terms of this, the direction of this kind of technology?
Yes, Peter, I'm going to kind of start at the macro level and then come down to the specific product. So if we look at a macro level of our electrical transmission system, and it's the energy that's in these computers and mics that we're using right now, we typically generate 3 units of power at the point of generation. We transmit 2, so we have capacity in our lines for 2 units of power to transmit. Excuse me. And we use 1. So, and the system was designed really as almost part of the military complex, that it had to be resilient and robust. And if we lost generation on Lake Erie, we'd have generation on Lake Ontario to make up for it. And if Lake Ontario got hit unexpectedly, we had Niagara Falls. And there was all this redundancy in generation. And then transmission was similar. There were transmission grids set up across the country that basically supply regions, and those regions tie together, and it makes this big network. But at the point of use, at the consumer level, equate this to Amazon. So think of Amazon. If you ordered a pair of shoes, and Amazon took 3 pairs of shoes from the manufacturer, all right, went to the truck, threw 1 pair away and put 2 in the truck. The truck came to your house, and when it got to your house, it threw the 2nd pair away and delivered 1. Right? That's the inefficiency in this power system that we have.
Is that because the energy just dissipates?
Well, energy dissipates, and you energy is generated now based on what they think the need is going to be. It's not based on what the need actually is, right? So the need is predictive based on what happens prior in the prior day. So, and none of this is bad. It's just the way the system's evolved and the way we have developed as an electrical grid, as a nation, and as a world. Most of the world operates this way. So if we go from this macro level all the way down to the point of use, what storage does is storage gives you a predictable, continuous signal as to what you're actually using. Because instead of using 10 units at 7 o'clock in the morning, and then 3 units at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and 5 units at 5 o'clock, and then 1 unit until 6 a.m. the next day, you use 3 all the time. Because when you go up or down, the pack picks up that variance. So if you go from 3 units to 10, you take those 7 units out of the pack for that short period. And then when you drop below 3, the pack charges. So when you create predictability at the point of use, you now can plan on transmission because you know exactly what you need. You can plan on generation because now you know how much generation you need and when you need it. Now, if you ran Niagara Falls, the hydro plant there, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at capacity, you would at least double the output that we currently get from it. It's all renewable. It's all invested infrastructure that we own. It all goes to New York State ratepayers because NYPA is a publicly owned entity, right? There is nothing but benefit in that situation. The reason we don't run Niagara Falls at capacity is because there's not enough room in the transmission system to send out the power all the time. There is at certain periods, but in the middle of the night, I think NYPA probably runs at less than a 40% load factor. So by putting storage in at the point of use, and in large scale, you allow these assets and these resources to produce round the clock.
I'm just trying to get to, we have a long text here, and I just want to go through it quickly and have your thoughts on it. The model described is somewhat flawed. If I buy the battery storage early on, I will save money as it draws off peak as I would one of only a few adopters. Nice millions of homes come online. Those savings would evaporate as they would all draw power at night and create a new peak, and costs at those times would rise. Thus, the utilities would always have peak rates and no low rates. A win for them and a fail for the consumer. What do you think about that?
I mean, that's a great question, right? And it's nice to see people engaged in the conversation. So I would encourage that type of question and thinking. My response to it is there are things we don't know because we haven't done this yet. But in an absolute sense, and in an absolute cost analysis, if we levelize load, if we have predictable energy generation, transmission, and use, costs will come down for everyone. And there's going to be some movement in that equation, right? Because initially, if you have off-peak rates, you're going to take advantage of those in the early adoption of this. Utilities are going to say, okay, I created all these off-peak rates, and where am I going to get my money from? The truth is, if we don't fix point-of-use predictability, energy costs will double, triple, and quadruple. They have to. Because we can't have a system that throws away two of its units of production. Like, you can't throw 67% of your production out the door and not have costs skyrocket. And you'll never get off of fossil fuels if we don't go to a more efficient means of using energy. Our energy use is going up, and our process by which we use it hasn't changed. So the equation has to move.
Well, you know, this goes to the, you know, the question of, I guess, the good of society here, because this gentleman who writes in talks about how the utilities, the supplier of the generator of the power itself, will say, "Hey, wait a minute, we're getting screwed in this whole thing, so I better figure this out and raise my rates in the evening if that's when everybody's drawing their power down." First of all, that begs the question: What would be a reasonable expectation from your perspective? You're one company in Buffalo, New York. A reasonable expectation of the pace at which a concept like yours could be adopted generally in a location like this?
So in my view, right, and you know, mine's a little biased because I'm the company. Within the next 10 years, there will be hundreds, if not thousands, of companies in this space. And every point of connection will have a battery system because it's a more efficient, it's a more reliable, it's a more resilient way for us to access energy. And Dennis is on the Climate Council in New York State, and he can tell you what the projected growth is in electrical load. It's a 700 times expansion of what we currently use if you go to a non-fossil fuel power system. So if we change gas heating and gas water heaters and oil-fired units to electric, we increase our need for power, you know, by 600 or 700 times. So if we're going to get there, which I think everybody agrees we want to, we have to find a more efficient way and a more reliable way to access our electric energy.
Yeah, I actually love that last question, Peter, because it really demonstrates that people are understanding the theory behind battery storage. Do I think we're going to get there to the point that we'll have this levelized load that is predictable? I do, but it will take time. If you look at the city of Buffalo, it operates 8 to 5. So that means we have a lot of off-peak to go in order to be able to levelize that load. And if there's an issue of, will the utilities dislike this, or would they fight this, or would they then put penalty pricing on, I would argue that they would love a levelized profile, because what they would have is now a predictable demand, and that the design of their infrastructure will simply be set not at the unpredictability of demands fluctuating, but a very steady state return. So the infrastructure that they actually invest in, that's where they're going to make their money, is on the rate of return. Utilities do not make money on the commodity cost of electricity in New York because the utilities do not produce that energy. They simply transmit it.
Well, Dennis, you're a genius on this stuff, and you've got a great background on this. And I want you to come back and explain some of that, because one of the things that, that concerns me always is that I try to study as much as I can about financial and economic trends. And there's tons of talk about batteries out there, and it seems to be a big mystery. And all of a sudden, you guys have figured it out. And I want you to explain a little bit about that, and also why some of this other discussion isn't going so well. We'll be right back with more from our house to yours after these important messages.
The West End, Buffalo's premier luxury waterfront development, is now open for private tours. Starting at $850,000, each townhome unit features three bedrooms, three and a half bathrooms, high-end finishes, multiple balconies, hardwood floors, soaring ceilings, two-car attached garage, and much more. With only 20 units being built, now is the time to make your appointment to view the model unit from this landmark development from Simonelli Real Estate. To schedule a viewing, call exclusive listing agent Deacon Tasker with Hunt Real Estate at 280-7787 or visit westendbuffalo.com.
Hunt has been serving your real estate services needs since 1911. In all that time, Hunt has never lost their commitment to this community, and nothing, including our current challenges, will change that commitment. Hunt will face the challenges as they always have with you, together. Through the power of state-of-the-art technology, they're able to remain open for business at Hunt Mortgage. Call 633-3700 and any of Hunt's mortgage professionals can assist you. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, NMLS 37405, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and this show is brought to you by the continuously improving huntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. And the show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, home of the pre-purchase commitment, the second look program, and the low rate and closing cost guarantee. You can reach them at 633-3700. This is a very special show for me because I'm learning a lot, and I hope you are as well. And please call in with your questions or comments or text us here if you do, because we just had a very, very thoughtful one. We've got a couple more here. But I'm in the studio today. This is not often that we're in the studio, but we're socially distanced, just so everybody knows, with John Williams, who is a really an innovator in the whole area of energy and energy storage and distribution of that energy through, I think, incredibly interesting means, and the founder of a company called Vridi Parente. And the president of that company is also here with us, Dennis Elsenbeck. And Dennis, for those of you that don't know, is probably the most experienced person in energy power generation and distribution of anybody in Western New York. It's good to have you here in the studio with me because I'm learning a lot. It was a great experience for me to see your plant yesterday. Just before the break, I was asking about battery storage, period, because this is, you know, Elon Musk is like the financial world's god right now. He's coming up with all this great new technology, but it seems to me it's relatively simple. I have one of those cars, and it's a relatively simple thing, but the big mystery seems to be you create these wind farms or these solar farms, and they say, well, you can't store the stuff, the energy that you're producing, so unless you use it right away, or there are short distribution systems, it's basically terribly inefficient. What's the truth behind this, and what's really the issue about battery storage, and how does your system kind of capitalize on the system that already exists, and then let them do whatever they're going to do generation wise?
So, Peter, the truth is always a little, you know, there's a lot of sides to it, right? So, what I would say is, in a holistic sense, this is an emerging industry. Right. So while there are technologies that are viable and technologies that aren't viable, the industry and the world is trying to decide what is the most efficient and what is the most reliable chemistry and system and process by which to do this. And the only reason storage doesn't exist in mass scale today is because 20 years ago, we didn't need it. We had tons of fossil fuel. We had all kinds of generation, and we were happy generating with coal and oil. Right. As a society and a world, we've changed. And we've said it's not good enough to rely on technology that's 100 years old. And whatever your political motivation is there, it's the right motivation. Meaning whether your motivation is to save the planet or your motivation is to have a more efficient, reliable, productive energy system, we get to the same point. Right. So it's not something we really need to argue about. We just need to figure out what is the most efficient, sustainable technology mm-hmm. to reach that goal.
Mm-hmm.
Batteries were invented in 1859. I mean, lead-acid battery was invented in 1859. It was put in a submarine in 1889 by the French. French had the first battery-powered submarine in the world, right? So this technology is not new, okay? But as fossil fuel became the dominant portable energy source, battery technology took a backseat with research and development. And all the development went into refining that internal combustion engine to make it as efficient and portable and reliable as you could. And we've done that, right? You can't make an internal combustion engine any better than we have, right? We've kind of gotten the last ounce of innovation out of that product. Battery technology, we're just at the beginning of. It's a chemical technology. It's made by some of the largest manufacturers on the planet, right? And it is reliable and dependable at this point. It just hasn't been adopted for this use. So in the last 15 years, like Elon Musk, 99% of all research and development innovation has gone into the passenger car industry, right? The passenger car industry makes up 3% of our gross domestic product as a world. So the other 90%, 97% of our gross domestic product or our lives have not had the adoption of battery technology. That's what Verity does, right? Verity is a disruptive energy company. We look at the other 97% and say, how can we adopt this technology to the other aspects of our lives and our businesses that it's not currently in?
Well, we have we're getting a bunch more inquiries here. One is that I would like to know why electricity is so expensive and the grid maintenance cost money if it doesn't explain the cost of the electricity. I can run and maintain my generators for about the same price that my electricity cost me. Generating my own power only cost me 5 or 10% more than the grid cost me. They sell power to everyone. It should bring down the price to consumers. That was a loaded question. Unpack that one for us, Dennis.
Yeah, so as a previous utility executive, I would be very sensitive how I would answer this question. But I love this question now as a non-utility executive. The reality is that when we say electric prices are high, I really think what we mean is my electric bill is high. And the electric bill actually has some of the lowest electric commodity prices that we've ever seen. A great deal of the lower electric prices has to do with the low price of natural gas. Natural gas generation actually sets the commodity price of electricity. So when you're generating, let's say, your own electricity, you're just generating it probably directly from natural gas, which is at its lowest level. What increases your bill is something I mentioned a little earlier, and that's a number of the subsidies that are attached to an electric bill that actually increases. So the conversation has to be you've got to separate electric price, pure electric price, from what you consider a high bill, because the high bill has more to do with the subsidy than the actual cost of electricity.
You know, I think that makes a lot of sense. Some people would say there's taxes in there someplace. Taxes are what you're talking about in terms
of... Yes, they call them subsidies, Peter.
Okay, well, you're being kind. The rest of us, that's just another tax. And anyway, so...
Peter, can I mention also that with all due respect to our friend Elon Musk, the largest manufacturer of electric vehicles in the early stages of battery technology actually was the Buffalo Babcock Motor Vehicle Company. So that if we think about Buffalo and what John is doing at Verity Parente and the old American Axle plant, we're actually bringing the innovation, bringing the manufacture of the next generation of technology back to Buffalo where it belongs. And that's some of the key separations between what we're doing at Verde Parente. And although I respect Elon Musk, the history and of innovation in transportation is Buffalo.
I think it's great that you said that, Dennis, and I truly appreciate that. And John, I can't say how much I appreciate what you're doing right here in Western New York, which is why I asked you originally why you're doing it here. And you answered that very eloquently. But as you look forward, we've only got about 6 minutes left in the show, but I'd like you to take us forward. What happens with Verity Parente? What happens to your company? How do you scale it up? How do you, if someone's listening, say, how would I get one of those boxes for my house? How do you take it from this engineering kind of masterpiece that you have to commercialization where people could actually take advantage of this?
So, Peter, there's really three steps to that, and we are well on our way on those three steps, right? The first is proving that the product can be economically sustainable, meaning that if you pay a price for this product, it has value, it brings back a return, and it's something that a consumer or a building owner looks at as an asset and not as a charity. The second thing is really safety and testing. And the safety and testing is where the real innovation is within Veridi. Because these technologies haven't been used in occupied buildings and adjacent occupied structures, they've never gone through testing protocol to allow for that. So if you're going to put insurance on this product, if you're going to have a fire marshal deem that it's safe for his battalions to work on if there's an unexpected event, and if you're going to have building codes and building owners, you know, bring them into their asset, they have to be safe. And they have to really be fail-safe. Like, they can't have an unexpected event. The third piece is deployment. And so all three of these are coming together on a project in downtown Buffalo for the Hopman Woodward Institute. And Hopman is in the process of installing really cutting-edge cryo microscopes. And these cryo microscopes will become part of the National Pandemic Infrastructure Research Complex. So pandemic research in the future will be supported by Hopman Woodward, and it will be supported by the medical campus here in Buffalo. You know, you've talked to Matt Enstis. I mean, this has been a 10-year journey or a 20-year journey for the medical campus that Tom Beecher started and extended through Matt Enstis. And really, it's coming together. Now, this technology, which was invented in Buffalo, is going to get added to these microscopes. It's going to allow Hopman Woodward to reduce their carbon footprint, lower their peak energy demand, and at the same time add additional infrastructure to that facility. So they're increasing their energy load with this new equipment, but because of the PAC systems, are bringing down their peak demand. So they're offsetting carbon footprint by increasing their electric load, right, which is revolutionary.
So the Hopman Woodward Institute is kind of a experimental project for you.
Well, it's an initial product for us, and the reason it's the initial deployment of this is that up until this project, it was illegal in New York State to have storage in a building. The building code didn't allow for it. And really, based on the efforts of Assembly Leader Crystal People Stokes and the Chairman of the Transportation Committee, Tim Kennedy, they took this and got through the Department of State a variance to allow this project to happen. The variance set in place the physical testing and safety requirements that storage will need to meet in order to be deployed in New York State. And we are now going through CSA and DNVGL to validate those metrics.
So you're going to need new code.
This is new code, yeah.
So one of the people that are texting in is inquiring about the safety of batteries themselves, the chemicals that you referred to that used to be in the old batteries. How do your batteries differ from what this person is inquiring about in terms of the safety of your device?
So batteries inherently are energy dense. Anything that is energy dense is inherently unsafe because it has a lot of power in a very small space. The difference with our PAC systems is that we've designed architecture around that chemistry to control it and mitigate it. So in an automobile, the only objective is more energy, less weight. So automobile packs inherently will fail, and when they fail, it can be catastrophic. Now, compared to gasoline cars, I mean, 10,000 gasoline cars light on fire every year and are destroyed, right? So it happens on the road, right? This isn't a new event, but it can't happen in a building or a house. So we've designed an architecture, we've got a lot of IP around it, that when something happens to a cell, it doesn't affect the pack. It basically stops what's called propagation.
I hate to end on a kind of a negative note because I don't want people thinking that you're putting these little boxes in their house that's going to blow up maybe. But we're going to have to end because we've only got 40 seconds left. But I want to, first of all, invite you back because I think there's so much that we've just begun to discuss here that is very interesting to me and I hope to our listeners as well. But our mission here is to help people protect and enhance their investment in real estate right here in Western New York. And you're doing that through the investment in your plant and all the great new technology that you're developing. And you're also doing it through your commitment to us here in Western New York, and I greatly appreciate that. Dennis Alsenbeck, President of Verdi Parente, and John Williams, the founder of that company. Thank you very much for being with us today. We'll be up next week at the same time. This is Peter Hunt. Remember, when it comes to real estate, Western New York is Hunt Country.